Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Pro Skills Basketball Podcast. I'm PSB co-founder Logan Kosmalski, sitting with our brand new PSB Richmond director and former professional basketball player, Rasheed Wright. Rasheed, thanks for joining us.
It is my pleasure, man. This has all been great so far.
Yeah, Rasheed is joining us for our PSB leadership retreat that we're hosting in Charlotte this weekend. So excited to have him and excited to get on board. And Rasheed, let's go through. I want to introduce everybody to kind of your basketball career. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up, how you got into basketball, where you went to college.
Well, born in Richmond, Virginia, moved to Greensboro, North Carolina when I was five. And I remember playing basketball my whole life. My dad put the ball in my hand. I grew up with him knocking me down outside and telling me how rough the NBA was going to be. So that's how I developed my passion for the game. And I didn't start off as one of the better players in my area, but loved it, kept working at it, ended up being the number one shooting guard in the state. When I left North Carolina, I broke all the scoring records in my high school and ended up going to Old Dominion University, where Jeff Capel, who's another North Carolina native, was the coach there. And I found some trust in him, really wanted to follow him. He was the coach at North Carolina A&T when I was in high school. And his son, one was playing at Duke at the time, one was playing at Greensboro Day School, so I felt some familiarity with them. Mm-hmm. Went there, played for Coach Capel for my freshman and sophomore year. Blaine Taylor came in my junior, senior year. Had a pretty successful college career, scored over 1,000 points. Didn't do as much winning as I wanted to. Got a few NBA pre-draft looks and then earned my first contract to go play in France. Went there, made a career out of it, and ended up being there 13 years, man.
Yeah. 13 years in one country. I don't know if that's pretty rare.
Yes.
In the professional European overseas basketball, and guys tend to bounce place to place. What do you think kept you in France for 13 years?
My children. We had our first daughter after my fourth year. Mm-hmm. And so my first 3 years, I'm a loyal type of person. I love the game of basketball way more than I love the business of basketball. So once my first 3 years, I found a niche where I was being successful. I love the fan base. I love what I was getting out of that situation. By my fourth year, I felt like it was time to move on. And then me and my wife got pregnant with our first kid. So stability became a huge thing. And just hearing so many horror stories about people not getting their money and how shady some of these different situations could be in different countries, I kind of decided to kind of stick in France. I didn't know it would be 13 years, but it kind of turned out that way.
So we're trying to start a new PSB podcast sort of series around your funny stories that happened while you were playing overseas in Europe. Can you hit us with anything appropriate, of course?
I got a great one. My first year. So, you know, in France, because me and Logan actually played against each other in France. So my first year, you know, you have those shutters on the door. So at nighttime, you close your shutters. You can't really see what's happening outside.
It's pitch black in there.
Yes. Yep. So me and my wife, well, she wasn't my wife at the time, but she came over. We were sitting down eating dinner. And next thing you know, this is kind of post 9/11, everybody kind of, you know, the culture had kind of changed about you overseas and all that type of stuff. And so we hear this boom, we hear this explosion, like I'm talking about right outside our window where the shutters shook. So we're like, oh, so we're looking at each other, you know, she's looking at me, I'm the man, she's looking at me like,
what are you gonna do?
right, I'm in like, is it time to run? Like, right, but you know, it's one way in, one way out. So I'm like, man, what in the world? So we kind of just pause for a second. Next thing you know, it's like, boom! So now we're like, okay, it's time to get up under the table. Like, I don't know what to do, who we call. And for everybody out there in this whole social media world, this is 2003. Mm-hmm. So there is no Facebook, Instagram. We still using calling cards, no Skype, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we're under the table kind of nervous. We whispering, trying to figure out what to do. What is this noise? Are they coming to get the Americans? And then I start hearing my neighbors talking, right? And they don't sound panicked or anything. So I'm like, well, it can't be that bad if they're talking. And so I slowly open the shutters to kind of look out there and see what's going on. And there is a car in the parking lot engulfed in flames, man.
Oh.
Just engulfed in flames. I mean, to the point where I can feel the heat from my window. And apparently, one of the kids had came and like put one of those little rags or whatever in the gas tank and lit that joint. And the car exploded in the parking lot, man. It's my first year over there. I'm like, I don't know about this, dog. Like,
you would never think of France was a safe country, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a war zone.
Yeah. Yeah, so me and my wife laugh about that now, but that was probably one of the craziest things I experienced.
That's why we're excited about this series, man. You never know what's going to happen when you're, especially that being your first year. I can only imagine, and I think it's hard for people to imagine themselves, putting themselves in that place of being in a new culture, in a foreign country, and having something like that happen is... You don't know which way is up and down, which way is left and right. Yeah. Trying to make sense of what is going on right now is a lot harder when you're away from home. But that's funny, man. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, kind of your journey as a professional. And you, like, I mean, I know this, but you started in, like, the lower leagues of France and gradually built your way up to, like, the top level. Right. Can you talk a little bit about that and what motivated you to prove yourself, to work your way up, and how that was for you starting at the bottom, and then how it felt like kind of once you got to the top level of France.
Right. That's my story, man. I'm an underdog. You know, my parents instilled in me hard work. Like, I wasn't allowed to bring C's home. I was a straight-A student, senior class president. We have our 20-year reunion coming up, man. And so, like, that's what I know. I know hard work, and I know proving myself. And the best of me comes out when things are stacked against me. So, you know, I was like most people who felt like I could have played in the NBA. And once I got overseas to National One, you know, and I saw the level of competition, I was like, I'm better than this, man. So, but I had some good advice from people just saying, hey, you got to get your foot in the door. You got to prove yourself. So once I got over there, I just had the mentality that I'm just going to kill, man. You know, I'm just going to kill. And so my first 3 years, I averaged between 23 and 25 points a game. And then we had these cup games. We got to play against Pro A teams and Pro B teams. And that's when I really wanted to show who I was. And so, like, I had games where I scored 46, 45, 44. And I'm a shooter, score, big guard. And once after my first 3 years, I moved up to Pro B. Had a pretty good year there. And then went to Pro A my fifth season, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of hit a little struggle point, because I was so used to shooting all the shots, and I get to a team that now we have four Americans on a team. Everything has to be shared. The French players are better. They're not going to just let me shoot as many shots as I can. I really struggled that year. And a really good friend of mine now named Jamal Ball brought me to the side and was like, look, man, you're going to have to restructure your game to kind of figure out where to pick your spot so you still can be yourself, but it doesn't look like you're taking away from the team. And that was probably one of the some of the best advice I got going into the following season, where I won a championship, and I spent four seasons in Poitiers. So that probably was 2010 was probably the climax, like the peak of my career. And from that point on, I played two more years in Pro A. At that point, we had two daughters. I was 30. I had foot surgery, and in the last 5 years of my career was more about stability, being in a comfortable situation where my kids were taken care of, because my wife and my kids were there, and I couldn't be in a situation where if I had three bad games, they were going to cut me. You know what I mean? So that my career kind of went up to a peak and then came right back down, and I finished my career where I started at the same club. So
yeah. So as you look back on your 13-year professional career in France, a lot of ups and downs. Mm-hmm. A lot of uncomfortable times, a lot of movement to new places and adjusting to being the top dog to all of a sudden having to take a back seat to other Americans. Like, when you look at your career as a whole, what do you take away from your time in France?
The experience altogether. I speak French fluently. I made great friends. I have people in France who I consider family. If I knew somebody that I loved that went overseas, it's people I can call and they would say, hey, they can stay with me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It has spawned everything that I do now. I have a nonprofit company. I work with kids all the time. And it just opened my mind. Like, I took French in high school, never thinking in a million years that I would be living in France for 13 years. And you know, America is a capitalist country. France is a socialist country. So I got to see another way of doing things, which has brought my perspective, man. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps me to be more diverse in my thinking when it comes to dealing with people and dealing with youth. So a lot of those things that I learned, I pull from right now in everyday life, just trying to, once again, improve myself. And even coming here and teaming up with y'all, I accept this as another challenge. And how do I become the best at it? I don't want to just do it. I want to be the best version of myself doing it. So
yeah, that's cool, man. Those are some great lessons. And I think you know, like I told before, we're here as part of our PSB leadership retreat, and I think you have the quote of the retreat so far, and that you consider basketball life school.
Yes.
And I think, you know, in maybe in today's world, I don't think necessarily people allow their kids to join basketball thinking that's what it is.
Right.
But I think that's a really powerful quote, and I'm kind of wondering is how you arrived at that.
To be honest with you, man, one of the trainers that I was having a deep basketball conversation with in France said that to me. This is like my 2 years before I retired, and I just thought it was profound because it is. And I think that as much as we talk and we try to teach kids and teach each other, we learn from experience. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, we learn the most from actually doing the thing. And I think that basketball brings people, unlike people, together to try to form a common goal or reach a common goal. I think you go through adversity in a physical way where you can't really avoid it. It's right there in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I just think that me loving the game of basketball has created an outlet for me to talk about real life situations using something that kids think is cool that I did. You know what I mean? It's not about me, but it's how my life has grown through basketball and how I can share that.
Yeah. So I've noticed a common theme in a couple of your answers. You spoke about your dad, you spoke about your parents, you spoke about the advice you got from Jamal Ball, mm-hmm. you spoke about the advice you got from this trainer. Mm-hmm. So I see a common theme is that you tend to recognize the role that other people have played in helping to get you where you are.
For sure.
I guess at the start, like, kind of talk to me a little bit about your parents and the role they played and how supportive they were or how they pushed you. Like, what, looking back, what role did your parents play in your career and your success?
Man, everything. That's why I take this position of being an impactful person in kids' life serious, because I know how many kids did not have that. Even, like, I sometimes thought my parents were hard. Like, my dad's from the projects, man. He military guy, used to box. He was big on conditioning. He was hard on me. I joke around a lot of times and say he got game daddy. Yeah, you know I mean, because he was rough, man. He pushed me, and maybe by some of the standards and rules that we have put in place, maybe it was more than what he should have done. But I personally don't feel like it, because I feel like once I figured out what he was trying to get me to see, he really was just trying to make sure that I was 100% confident in myself, worked as hard as I could, and that I believed in myself. Mm-hmm. And my mom was there to lick all my wounds. Like, she's my biggest fan.
So they balanced each other out.
Yes, they did, uh-huh. Man. She, my biggest fan, always was, if I needed to not be tough for a moment, you know what I mean? I could lean my head on my mom's shoulder, you know? And I'm just so thankful to have parents like them, because, you know, a lot of kids don't. And it's not to say that my parents are perfect, because they're not, by no means, but I feel like they did everything that they could do to put me and my sisters in a position to be successful. And I try to take those same skills and help other kids.
Yeah. So going back to your dad, you talked about how he's kind of a military guy and how he really pushed you. I like hearing stories like that, but then at the flip side, I'm afraid sometimes people hear that and they think that it's okay. I'm just going to go beat my son to the ground. I'm going to mm-hmm. be hard. And you talk about your mom kind of balancing that out. Mm-hmm. Do you recognize that as you? I think it's important that youth coaches and anybody that deals with youth mm-hmm. have their own internal balance of, right. Man, I'm going to push this kid, but I'm also going to let him know, like, I really care, or he or she. I'm going to let this child know that, like, I'm going to hold you to a high standard. I'm going to push you. I'm going to be hard on you, but at the same time, I care about you. Did your dad operate that, or did your mom and dad balance each other out? And how does that affect how you operate today? Are you a balance? Are you a mix of the two?
I'm a mix of the two. That is the balance. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some of my dad's ways, I would never go about coaching or teaching a kid that way, but I pull from the lesson that he was trying to instill in me. I've had enough experience to be able to cultivate that into words or into experience so it can be receptive by kids. Yeah. And I think kids see truth, man. Until their heads get all messed up with all the information that's put in. When they're young, they see truth, and they know if you care about them. And if they feel like you care about them, then you can push. You can raise your voice at times. Now, that's different than belittling them and tearing them down or destroying their confidence. Mm-hmm. I think that you can be assertive in and showing them how to be the best version of themselves without making them feel bad about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that once they know that you care about them and that's why you're doing it, they'll even self-check themselves. Mm-hmm. Because if they know they're not doing their best or they weren't paying attention. Like, my three pillars are energy, effort, focus when I deal with kids. Those three things. If I got energy, effort, and focus, I ain't worried about you making a mistake. We all make mistakes. But as long as I have those three, we're gonna limit the amount of mistakes that we make, so.
Mm-hmm. Switching over, let's talk about you spoke about Jamal Ball, who's and for those of you guys, I mean, I played, like you said before, we played against each other in France. Mm-hmm. Probably, what was that, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I remember.
It's funny how the basketball world works. You know, like, all of a sudden we get it reintroduced and we remember who each other were. But you mentioned Jamal Ball. So for people that don't know, Jamal Ball is an Ohio kid. Who is now like a living legend in France, and when it comes to like the French professional basketball league. He was there for a long time. Really well-respected player. But I want to bring this back to you, and that you told that story about how he helped you sort of adjust to a difficult time in your playing career.
Right.
I guess how do you see yourself now, and what role do you see as like, hey man, I had somebody really help me that wasn't your mom or your dad, but just. Do you feel a need to kind of like repay that, not to Jamal, but like kind of pay that forward? And what, how do you see your role now as a former professional athlete and helping those that try to like want to go on the path? Like, I want to have a career like Rashid Wright.
Right.
How do you approach that?
Well, to me, that's what it is. Like, so for example, a lot of times I feel like people, when they're working with kids, they have these projections like, oh, this kid will be able to play in college, or this kid might be a pro, or this kid might can make this team. I never look at it like that. I always look at them as, who are they right now? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Now, how do I help you enhance your strengths? How do I help you improve your weaknesses? That's it. At the end of the day, what you end up doing with basketball ultimately depends on how much time you put in it. It's not enough time in a day that you could be working with me that I'm going to be the reason. I might be able to show you something or help you with something, but how bad do you want to work at this? So I take each kid where they are. And we just work from there, and we just see how good we can get. And if I can show them different things through my experiences, and I will always use myself as an example, especially the times when I felt inadequate, times when I was not confident, times when I failed, times where I was frustrated, you know, because I don't want them to feel like I'm this great person who never had those same feelings or emotions that they're having right now. I want them to understand I recognize that emotion or that feeling, and I know where it's coming from because I was at that place. Yeah. Now let's take that energy and refocus it somewhere else so that we can improve.
Is that something you did naturally? It's like, I mean, obviously a 13-year professional career and making good money and you know, just overall successful. Mm-hmm. Is that something you did naturally? So like paint me a picture of, you're in a pro-A French league game, and you just had a terrible night.
Right.
You go home, maybe you're with your wife, maybe you're by yourself in your apartment. What are the mental patterns that you went through, and how did you feel about yourself, and how did you recover from that?
I'm probably not the best example of the things that I teach.
Hey, we're going to use the example.
Like, right. Like, I mean, like, there's been plenty of guys that I've played against who end up being my teammates that were surprised of the person that I am, because I'm a tenacious competitor. And if things weren't going my way, I could be aggressive in practice. I could punch a door, leave and walking into the locker room. I could be the person you don't want to be around for the next 10 hours after the game just because I just can't get this out of my mind. But I think having kids, man. Mm-hmm. The more I had, once I started having kids, what was important to me changed. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, this game, yes, I was still upset that I lost. Yes, I could still be frustrated about the direction of the team. But when I come home and somebody says, Daddy, I done forgot all about that, man. Those little girls, I have four daughters, those girls mean the world to me. And I think that goes back to me working with kids. Like, I'm able to see where they're coming from and help them to do things that I didn't do, or be able to channel their energy in a different way. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like that's your purpose?
That is my purpose. I definitely feel like I found my purpose. I feel like, I don't feel like basketball was my purpose. I feel like basketball was the tool that helped me to unlock my purpose.
Yeah.
And now I have found the thing that I want my legacy to be about when I lead this world one day. And I think that comes in a lot of different forms, but it's ultimately using my experiences to help impact the lives of people who come after me.
Mm-hmm. So Rasheed, how do you respond to, I mean, there could be some parents out there listening to this right now. They're like, well, Rasheed, that's great for you to say, but you got a college scholarship and you played overseas basketball and made money. But like, I'm just fighting for my son to get a scholarship. So I'm going to be hard on him and I'm going to do this. And, you know, you're talking all about purpose and you're talking about helping others and stuff, but like, I got to look out for my son. You know, like, what's your response to a parent or guardian that says something like that?
Well, my response to that is, first of all, playing college sports, we're talking about a very small percentage of people. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a very difficult thing to do. And I never tear down a kid's goals. I don't care if they say, I want to be better than Michael Jordan. Who knows? Maybe you will be one day. I'm not the person to say that won't happen. But life is bigger than basketball. Mm-hmm. And if you're just pushing your kid to get a scholarship, then what you're telling me is, this is all about money. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure, you don't want to have to pay for this thing later on. And so if there's an avenue for that child to get there freely, cool. And I understand that mindset, but what if this kid has the next idea that creates Microsoft? Mm-hmm. Like, how many successful people do we know in this country and in this world didn't go to college? And this is not to say that kids shouldn't go to college, but I think everybody is different. And I think that we should be pushing our kids to be the best version of themselves, no matter what they want to do. And maybe it translates to a college scholarship. Maybe it translates to them being a successful business person or a successful teacher or a successful doctor or whatever it is. That's why I do this. If the kid loves basketball to the point where they can go play in college, great. I will do everything I can to help them get there. But outside of that, if they can just learn how to be dedicated, how to work hard, how to sacrifice, how to be confident, how to be motivated, how to work with others, how to communicate. Like, if they can learn that, they'll be successful no matter what they strive to do. So from a parent's perspective and me being a parent, I think that should be the motivation in trying to help your kid be successful.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned before, and this is one thing, when Rasheed and I kind of got hooked up together, I did some research on you. I found some videos, mm-hmm. and I saw two things. I saw you taking off your shirt a lot, and I saw you speaking fluent French. Tell me about the process of you learning to speak French. Was that something that you naturally did, or was that something that you set your mind to while you were over there?
Yeah, that's what it was. Just like I said before, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. That's just how I am. And just showing up in the locker room and being the only American on the team for 3 years, and everybody's laughing and joking, and I have no idea what anybody is talking about. So the captain of the team, my first year over there, spoke a little English. We still great friends today. I talked to him about a month ago. Shout out to Sebastian Michelet. And I just asked him, how do you say? And he said, como tu dis or como s'appelle? And man, I spent a year and a half just asking that question over and over again. The people got tired of me asking that question. But I built up a vocabulary.
Yeah.
And then I would have days when I was like, okay, I'm only going to speak French today. And it was very frustrating for me because I didn't know all the words. I didn't know how to say anything. And so I would just try to talk, and people would laugh at me and look at me like I had two heads. But eventually what they would start doing was correcting me, mm-hmm. helping me. Oh, that's what you're trying to say. And they would say it. So we had another 6 months to a year of that. Then by my third year, halfway through my third year, I got to a point where I could hear it. Mm-hmm. I could understand what people were saying. And once I could hear it, the rest was a breeze after that.
What is it about you that makes you okay with being laughed at? Or with, because I'm trying to draw a correlation, and like, learning a new language is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And you're in an environment where you don't know anybody, and mm-hmm. where people are speaking a different language, and you're getting laughed at. Like, what is it about you? How did you respond when you know, you say something, people are laughing at you? Do you take that personally? Mm-hmm. Is that, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Like, mm-hmm. so what is it about you that made you like push forward and keep learning that language?
It goes back to my parents.
Yeah,
man, my mom and dad in first grade bought me a briefcase instead of a book bag. And the only person who thought that was cool was the teacher. Yeah. You know what I mean? So my parents have always set this standard of doing my best. Well, you know, as a kid, when you're trying to do your best, that's not always the cool thing to do. So I've been laughed at before. But I also saw that change. Because the things that came with making good grades, making the right decision, and that does not mean I'm a perfect person by any stretch of the imagination, but the things that came with me standing out instead of trying to fit in was first laughed at, then it was regarded as a great thing, right? So when I became a man, I then understood that, hey, once I learned to speak French, this is going to be a great thing for me. Uh-huh. Now, everybody can laugh right now. It's just like basketball. When you first go out there and you can't play, uh-huh. yeah, laugh right now. But I'm in the gym every night. Uh-huh. Eventually, I'll have my time to laugh. You yeah. know what I mean? So that's basically where that comes from.
Yeah, and this is something that we've kind of talked about here during our leadership retreat. Mm-hmm. It's like just establishing that growth mindset of everything is an opportunity to learn yes. and to get better. And I think that's tough for a lot of kids now. Is like they're afraid of competition because right. what happens if they lose? People right. are going to clown on them. What happens if they wear something different to school? They're going to get laughed at. Right. Or what happens if they give a good effort and they fail?
Right.
Are they going to be outcast? Are they going to be laughed at? Right. Are they not going to belong?
Right.
So I think you and I, one thing that binds us and one thing that we believe at PSB is that, like, you know, encouraging kids to view the process mm-hmm. and not as much as the outcome. You seem very much like a process guy.
Yeah, and just, you know, being okay with who you are. Like my aunt, I have a deaf aunt who has some physical some mental handicaps, right? And when she first moved in with us, I was 9 years old, and you know, it's this weird thing at first. You're like, what's this? You know what I mean? But by the time I'm 13, 14, she's just like everybody else. Now, I can see everybody else's reaction to her as this is different. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. once again, I'm just pulling from my experiences. So that kid, and I was the same way as a little kid. That kid that everybody picked on or won't sit at the lunch table with him or her, I sit at the lunch table with you. Mm-hmm. And even when people didn't think I was cool, and once people start thinking I was cool, I still sit at the lunch table with you. The kid that comes into the training facility who maybe will never make a basketball team, I'm gonna high five, what up, man? You know what I mean? I wanna show you love, and I wanna show you love in front of these kids who think they're cool. And if any of these kids pick on you, I'm gonna hold them accountable and let them know that I don't think that's cool. So if you think I'm cool and you're doing that, I don't think that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yep. And before you know it, now you got these cool kids applauding the kid who might be a little different from making a basket yeah. or doing it the right way in the drill. And to me, that is bigger than basketball. This is about life. You know, when you walk out into this world, you're going to encounter all different types of people. And I'm just a firm believer that if we show love, it'll come back to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rashid, I think you've perfectly articulated why we're excited to have that part of pro skills right now, man. That's good. I want to wrap this up, but like, let's one thing we try to do before everybody finishes up, like, where can people follow you? Let us know your Instagram, Twitter handles. Where can people follow you? Where can people learn more about Rashid Wright?
Well, you could just on Facebook, just type in Rashid Wright. You can find me right there. On Instagram, I am Raw Eternal 8. So RAW, those are my initials, Rashid I2 Wright, Eternal. Goes with the number 8, which was my favorite number that I played with because it doesn't stop. There's no starting point, no stopping point. It just keeps going. And I'm an energy person. I believe in that. So those are the two mediums that you can find me on.
Okay. Good, man. Again, I'm going to reiterate how excited we are to have you on board and ready to get to work in Richmond. So people up, we got anybody listening in Richmond, be on the lookout for Coach Rashid Wright and PSB Richmond director and ready to get to work with you, man.
So yes, sir.
Excited to have you on board.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining us, man.
No problem.